to the terms of Rule 159, in the absence of the chairperson of the committee, to ask one of his members, the chairperson. So maybe before, so let me just indicate that two members from the ANC have been. So I am going to open the floor for nominations for the chairperson. Honourable member. Do we have a second for this? Honourable.
Yeah, and Honourable Mzimba would arrive at it late, and may they also tend to be an apology.
And Sir,
who's your favorite? Any other nomination? In the absence of any other nomination, may I call upon Honourable Major to chair the meeting?
The conditions
are
forced, yes?
You don't want to move. You don't want to move. Speak for yourself, Glynis.
Good morning, members and members of the public present here today. I'll be standing in for Honourable Chairperson Mathole Motsepe. My name is Anakilani Mathole. Today we're going to be looking at responses by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to the public comments on the judicial matters amendment. In our last meeting on the same matter, there was a bit of a confusion in terms of the business, how the business of sexual offence is called, is supposed to be run, to really maximally benefit the purpose of the court. A request was made that the department should actually, the consultative meeting with the civil society organizations here. I think rape crisis is one of the civil society organizations here. And I'm thinking today we will actually hear on progress relating to the matter. May I then hand over to the department for presentation of Honourable Deputy Minister. Welcome.
Chair, thanks. Maybe if I can just then open. But just firstly on the issue from the public hearing, which was the dispute over the word exclusive and the request from the committee that we convene a further meeting with the...
Is your mic on?
Sorry? Oh, it's that mic, sorry. I forgot how... just to start with the issue that arose at the public hearings on the use of the word exclusive in sexual offences in Section 35A. We were requested by the committee to meet with the organisations that had made the presentation, that was Rape Crisis, Women's Legal Centre, and Rape Survivors Justice Campaign. So we had a meeting with them and with the regional court presidents because the problem is more one of case flow management and things. The regional court presidents were down here for the budget vote. We'd invited, I think we were expecting about two of them, seven or six pitched up because they were so enthusiastic. There were discussions There was then a draft that was at Women's Legal Center. Jean, that's Women's Legal Center had submitted. We sent that out to the regional court presidents, and then what you see before you is basically a proposed version from the department, based on or taking into account the draft from the Women's Legal Center. And some comments from the regional court presidents, and then some, I think one could say, consequential amendments to the taking into account the position. So that's what's tabled here now. The main issue you would see is that, I mean, in the meeting between the NGOs and the regional court presidents, the issue was that what was needed was an exclusive sexual offences role. And that's what you then see in this new definition of a sexual offences court, a court that has a court role that deals exclusively with the bail application, plea proceedings, trial or sentencing in criminal proceedings. The definition of rather than just trial was because you may need to lead evidence in a bail application. Plea proceedings doesn't need to be there. No, sorry, plea proceedings shouldn't be there. Or should it be there? You're not going to need evidence for a plea.
No, most probably not, but there might be circumstances that warrant it.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, anyway, but so your general remands of a sexual offences case don't have to be heard in a sexual offences court. So anyway, that's the proposal. I understand that the Women's Legal Centre and... how many owned rape crisis are happy with the proposal? It's only been tabled before you now. Mr. Robertson can take you through it in more detail if necessary. So that's just on that point. But as far as we understand, we've found each other. The other then that the department's got is a document which is a response to all the written submissions received, because the other submissions were written, which they can take you through.
Thank you, Ms. Chairperson. Rape Crisis Centre, in their presentation or proposed amendment to the section 55A of the Sexual Offences Act, that was in the Additional Matters Amendment Act, mainly relates to the inclusion in Section 1 of the Sexual Offences Act of a definition that comprehensively defined a sexual offences court. Currently, in terms of Section 55A, as proposed in the bill, a provision is made that a court has jurisdiction to try certain specific offences, mainly that which is of a sexual nature, as well as any other offences that is deemed to be necessary in the interest of justice to be tried together with the sexual offence. That part of Section 55A was moved to the definition and now provides that sexual offences court, like the Deputy Minister said, is a court which has a court role that will deal with sexual offences matters as well as other offences that can be tried together with the sexual offences case in front of a court. Due to the fact that the department has moved the provisions that defined the jurisdiction of the sexual offences court in Section 55A of the proposed amendment, Clause 37 of the bill is therefore also amended to the extent that the jurisdiction is not further specified in Section 55A, but now merely say that the sexual offences court must be established at a high court or a lower court as a sexual offences court, and it stops there. That is the main amendment that was affected to the proposed Section 55A. Thank you. Can you start with the other presentations as well? kind of do it. I'm going to hand over to Ms. Ross, which is going to deal with the other clauses and comments we received on that.
There's a hand from Bongo. I thought maybe you wanted to comment on what has been presented up to now. Okay. Do you mind introducing yourself again?
Sorry, Mr. Honourable Bongo. I'm Sarah Robertson, Department of Justice. I'm a state law advisor at the Department of Justice. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Chairperson. I hand over to Ms. Ross.
Chair, I don't know if it was the breakfast cereal that you know. There's one I know that's advertised about. She got it all this morning. But could you respectfully ask Ms. Honourable Breitenbach to restrain herself? She's intimidating officials and members.
I'm not going to ask anything because the mood is good. Can we proceed to voting? Okay, over to Sheena. Over to you,
Thank you, Chair. With concerns that were raised in respect of Clause 37 of the bill having been addressed, but apologies, Chair, maybe I should follow Mr. Roberts' what he did and introduce myself. My name is Teresa Ross, also from the Department of Justice. I'm also a state law advisor. I will proceed to deal with clauses in respect of which comments or submissions we also made. And there are clauses which were the commentators, like the Commission for Gender Equality, as well as the Civil Society Prison Reform Initiative, merely supported. But I'll dwell into the ones in which substantive comments or submissions were made. I'll start with Clause 2 of the bill, and in that clause, what Clause 2 of the bill does is to, or rather it aims to delete Section 12, Subsection 7 of the Magistrates Court Act, in order to do away with the requirement that only a magistrate of a regional division whose name appears on the list that is envisaged in subsection 7 of the Act may adjudicate on civil disputes as well as divorce matters. And that the section further provides that if that needs to be done in terms of a criteria set in subsection 8. Now, the Commission for Gender Equality raised a concern that the clause does not make any mention of gender equity considerations that needs to be taken into consideration when the magistrate of a regional division appoints a magistrate to adjudicate in civil disputes or divorce matters. And to that, the CGE then makes recommendations to amend the clause along the lines that the magistrate at the regional, at the head of the regional division, must ensure that gender imbalances of the past are addressed when making the appointments. Now, in response to that submission, Chair, we submit that this the provision or the appointment that the CGE is referring to is actually not, will not be a new appointment, because the amendment only seeks to do away with the burdensome administrative procedure as far as the keeping of a list by the Magistrates Commission of persons who are competent to preside over civil matters and divorce matters. And we submit that the concerns of the CGE are already addressed in other pieces of legislation, such as the Constitution and the Employment Equity Act, as well as the PEPUDA. So the appointment will not be new, but it is just rather for the head of a regional division to identify those magistrates who will be presiding in those matters for, you know, having attended the relevant training. Therefore, we submit that there is no need to effect the proposal as requested by the CGE. Now, moving to clause 3 of the bill, the CGE again points out that because the clause 3 aims to amend section 2 of the State Liability Act of 1957, in order to do away with the restrictive application of the act to proceedings arising out of a contract or delict, and to ensure that it will be applicable to all proceedings, proceedings such as a joinder or even review applications, in order that court processes should be served on the head of the department concerned, and a copy of the process should, within 5 days of after the service of the process, to be served, having been served on the head of the department, also to be served on the state attorney operating in the area of jurisdiction of the court from which the process has been issued. And further, it enjoins the state attorney that the state attorney must engage with the head of a department regarding the proceedings that are arising out of the process served. And the CGE submits that the requirement that the plaintiff must cite the executive authority of the department as a nominal defendant is prejudicial and affects the rights of the plaintiff for the following reasons that they cite: that a reference to executive authority, a nominal defendant, and a state department is unclear, and that it may contribute to citing or rather a wrong party being cited in the process. And they further submit that the departments are represented in provinces, and it may not always be practical to serve processes or serve process on the head office. They therefore, based on what I said, propose an amendment to which reads as follows: that section 2 must be amended for the expression of nominal defendant, that they propose that it be substituted for a defendant in a representative capacity, and that section 2, subsection 2 must be amended to provide for the service of process on the national, provincial, or regional head of the department who is located closest to the court which has issued the relevant proceedings or notice. In response to that, they make a further proposal to say a national provincial or regional head must be defined as to include without limitation a director general, chief executive officer, a national commissioner or provincial commissioner and member of executive council. Now, in response to that, the department responds as follows, that reference to certain expressions which are regarded as unclear, such as the executive authority is defined in section 4, capital A of the State Liability Act, and is defined to mean in relation to a national department, the cabinet member who is accountable to parliament for that department, and a provincial department, the member of the executive council of a province who is accountable to the provincial legislature for that department. A department is also defined as in section 4 capital A as a national or provincial department, and nominal defendant has a legal technical meaning and is used to describe a person or entity that has a technical nexus or connection to a dispute, who must be cited as a party in the dispute in order for the court to properly decide the dispute, and who did not cause or contribute to the cause of the action. Therefore, the expression nominal defendant and defendant in a representative capacity is the same, and a reference to that can be seen in the case of Jaiya versus the member of the Executive Council for Welfare, the Eastern Cape, and another, which is a 2004 case. The primary aim of the defendant of the amendments in section 2 is to address the number of default judgments which are obtained against government departments from time to time, and that is due to the fact that departments fail to oppose litigation against them. And one of the major reasons for that being that judgments or process or litigation is not brought to the attention of persons or officials who need to deal with that. And also, you know, not brought to the attention of the state attorney. Because various government departments have a provincial presence, the fact that process is set on a person at a provincial office or branch does not necessarily mean that that person will bring that process to the attention of the department or the head of the department who is supposed to deal with that and is cited in the summons. The amendment aims to ensure that process is then served on the head of a department at the head office of a department, and the head of the department is under an obligation to deal with the litigation, with such litigation against his or her department. The amendments proposed in clause 5 deals comprehensively and defines a head of the department with reference to the incumbent of a post as mentioned in column 2 to schedule 1, 2 and 3 of the Public Service Act, and as such includes any employee acting in that position. The clause 4 is also by the
sorry, CDE. Chair, I would maybe just suggest, I don't know if the committee wants, where the person making the submission has agreed with the clause, supported the clause, is it necessary for Ms. Ross to go through those issues? Because clause 4, for example, CGA are just saying they support the clause.
I just think they support, maybe there's no need to engage.
Thank you, Chair. I will then move on to the submission in respect.
Just a minute, Ms. Ross. Honorable
Father. Yes, Chair. Can we also, rather than the official reading, you know, sentence by sentence, in the response, maybe get a summarized maybe. I see some of it's just reading line by line. And I think maybe it's going to take too long.
Honorable Polano?
I just did not understand what the deputy minister was saying. Then. He said there's no need for engagement. And that's all it's kind of.
He's actually saying where there is no change in terms of the submission, they are actually supporting what has been presented, then we shouldn't actually go into it. Because we have submissions that his source is actually presenting to us. Like, for example, for the one from the CG. Am I right?
Yes. It's basically, if you look at clause 4, there's on page 4 of the document, there's an explanation of clause 4, and all that is being said is that the Commission for Gender Equality supports the amendment. So what I was just raising was it necessary for Ms. Ross to read out the amendment because it's supported? They're not raising anything new, and that she restricts herself to where they've raised issues and what the department's response is.
Thank you, Deputy Minister.
So it's basically reporting on the work and engagement of the gender.
Yeah, I mean, what we're doing now is going through the submissions made. They were written submissions. So where somebody is just saying they support a clause, my suggestion was that it's not necessary to go through an explanation of what that clause is. Obviously, when you deliberate on the bill, you can do that. But then I'd suggest also, Ms. Ross, that you take Honourable Mpanza's point in and just sort of summarise the issues where possible.
You may proceed, Ms. Ross. So all of this is in relation to the bill that has been taken before us.
Thank you. Mrs. Chairperson, Mrs. Ross is supposed to deal till the next paragraph that deals with the submission from the Commission of Gender Equality on clauses 3, 4 and 5 of the bill, but I will take over from there on, but I also deal with that. It's mainly that the Commission for Gender Equality said that in the State Liability Act there's not sufficient terms insofar as not sufficient definitions to describe head of the department, nominal defendant, etc. Our submission is that this is adequately defined in section 4A of the State Liability Act as inserted in the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. Clause 6 of the bill, we received a comment from the Law Society of South Africa. It relates mainly to the making of regulations regulating the administration of the state. The Law Society said or recommended that certain pre-procedures must be put in place in order for the department to make certain regulations. Amongst others, that guidelines need to be issued. Our response is usually that when we make regulations, all matters relevant to the regulations is usually taken into account when we make regulations, and it's not necessary to develop guidelines before we take the next step. Obviously, if you make regulations, the regulations must aim to give effect to the Act, And if regulations cannot give effect to the proposed amendment to the Administration of the State Act, that regulations will be irrational and it will be constitutionally unlawful. So our submission is that all and what is also proposed by the Law Society is usually taken into account in the making of regulations, and it's not necessary to develop certain guidelines beforehand. Clause 8 deals with amendments to the Criminal Procedure Act, that is a statute on statute limitation on the prosecution of cyber crimes. Civil Society Prison Reform Initiative merely agrees with our submission or our amendment. So it's not going to discuss. The next main amendment relates to Clause 17, where we amend the Sheriff's Act to provide for the appointment of sheriffs under certain conditions where the office of sheriff cannot be filled. The Commission for General Equality again asked that we should specifically provide for provisions to make to deal with gender equity, and our submission is that there's a plenitude of other legislation that already place that obligation on a functionary who appoints somebody to take gender equity into account when making such an appointment. The same comment is also applicable to Clause 18 of the Bill, who also amend the Sheriff's Act. I'm not going to go through that. Clause 24 and Clause 30, we also received comments thereon. But it's probably not necessary to discuss that, merely due to the fact that the Commission for Gender Equality merely supports the amendments. Clause 37 relates to the Sexual Offences Court and Clause 55A. I believe that has already been discussed in detail in the beginning. I'm not going to go through all the representations that was received. The Rape Crisis Center in the beginning criticized us for taking out the word exclusively, and that was covered, so I think it's not necessary to discuss it any further. But the main effect of that is that we are proposing a new clause to give effect to the recommendation which was handed out at a committee. Thank you. Ms. Chairperson, maybe on the proposed amendment, there was an oversight in the proposed clause 34A. At the end of that paragraph, it refers to or the last line, and which have facilities. I think it should be which has facilities. That is the only amendment I want to propose to the draft at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I open for comments and questions from members? I will recognize Honourable Horn.
Thank you, Madam Acting Chair.
You can proceed, Honourable Horn.
Thank you. I have a question in respect of clauses 3 and 4 in the bill, and specifically in respect of service going forward. And maybe the department can confirm whether I understand this correct, but if I read it, service going forward should be on the head of the department. And then if you look to the schedules of the Public Service Act, the head is defined to be the Director General. So is my understanding then correct that, let's say, for example, going forward, if the head of the Department of Agriculture is to receive a summons, a summons issued, let's say, from the High Court in the Northern Cape, that there will be no address that will satisfy that requirement other than the office in Pretoria, the head office of the department.
Okay, thank you. Can you please write to the
Yes, I think my question is very similar to that one of Honorable Khan. I'm thinking that other departments, provincial, others, the head office of the authority. Now, I am now in Tata of Zam. I am not sure, must I point a ceremony in Pretoria to go and serve before I can serve the state attorney who is about a kilometer away from me. So that, I just want to understand the logic in that. And what, whether that will not, I understand that they need to protect the government. Understand it very well. But is there no other way apart from making it difficult for a plaintiff to serve?
Thank you, Honorable Pumlan. What I actually also just wanted to talk a little bit more on is the Law Society submission for regulations, I would say enabling regulations, because it actually said you have turned it down, because you normally take regulations if you don't really care. The sector of the meter is there are areas that are contentious and they decide for the bill. And what would then be so difficult for you to actually think that way?
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Chairperson. I'll start with the latest explanation which I must give. You must distinguish between primary legislation where there's an enabling provision that gives authority the power to make regulations, and then the regulations itself. The power to make regulations is usually stipulated in the Act in detail and tells you to make regulations regarding X, Y, and Z. In terms of the proposed amendment, the department needs to make regulations to provide for the appointment of persons that will be involved in the administration of estates. Usually there's conflicting decisions in the Constitutional Court whether regulations amounts to administrative action on the one hand, or whether it is something that falls between legislation and administrative action. Usually if it's an administrative action, you need to comply with the FUTCHA Act. Usually there must be public consultation, views must be taken into account, I think it's in section 4 of the PAJA, results must be published. On the other hand, if it's not strictly administrative action, a narrower approach can be followed. But usually when regulations is made, there's public consultation beforehand to get an idea what must be covered in the regulations that you want to make. After that, a draft is usually drafted. That draft is then again distributed for public comment. After comments is received, the draft is usually finalized. It's sent through to the office of the Chief State Lawyer's Advisor for final certification. And then after that, it's promulgated in the Gazette to have a binding legal effect. The Law Society wants us to impose obligation to develop certain guidelines which must be taken into account if we make regulations. So our submission that is not necessary. During the whole process of drafting of regulations, there's usually a draft and guidelines and a research that is done to make sure that the regulations that is going to be promulgated will give effect to the empowering provision. Therefore, it's not necessary to put in an elaborate pre-process that must be followed to finalize regulations. And our submission is that the Law Society's proposal is really not necessary. Anything else I need to elaborate? Okay, let me just explain. Usually when you make
Thanks, Jed. I'm Kalei Pillay from the Department of Justice.
Chair, just why have Honourable Bongo and Honourable Breitenbach left together?
Are you jealous now?
No, I'm just curious.
Sorry,
Ms.
To explain what the Law Society is saying, the clause that we are trying, that we want to amend, we want the Minister to make regulations on the basis of the categories of persons who can be appointed to deal with the administration of estates. Currently, I think it is restricted to attorneys. And we're looking at broadening that category so that the Minister can consider other persons as well. And Saral explained that we are going to do it by way of regulations, meaning that there's a whole long process of consultation in the drafting and in the research that will go into what the final regulations will look like.
I get it now.
But therefore,
just explaining the process that's required.
Yeah.
We make it safe to say that this is a process you're going to do.
Who isn't, yeah. But I think...
To respond to the question?
Thank you, Ms. Chippis. And regarding the question that was raised on the service of process on the head of the department, in essence, it's correct. The current clause changed the position, and in order to validly effect a valid service in terms of the Act, it must take place on the head of the department. In the past, what usually happened is that somebody will go to a provincial department and serve a summons on, let's say, the gardener. Chances that will come to the notice of a head of the department is quite slim. However, there is procedures and services in place and currently which must be followed to serve process, and that's usually followed. But In various instances, summonses is not brought to the attention of the head of the department. Obviously, you can issue summons out of a court in a place where a national department doesn't have a national presence. But obviously, service of that process must take place on the head of the department. According to us, that is the only way how we can address the current problem regarding default judgments and the current problem of not addressing litigation against the state or not actually enter appearances. And that is to ensure that summonses must get to the head of the department, who is actually the responsible party at the last instance, who will be ordered to pay a sum of money, or who can actually steer the course of the litigation or oppose it. And, we couldn't find in our investigation any other procedure that can be invoked to ensure that a summons must be served on the head of the department as the last instance. We did consult with the state attorney. I believe it's actually their recommendations that was primarily taken into account. Thank you.
I see Honorable Horn and Honorable Mpumlwana. Just briefly want to say something to you. Maybe it's in relation to what you're saying now. Let's hear what they want to say, Honorable Horn.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think this is something we will, as a committee, have to look at very carefully, because members will remind themselves that the liability of the state is already limited in many respects, in terms of prescription, for example, And everything I'm hearing, even though I can understand the practical considerations, with all respect, also points to proper internal governance. So it would seem that we ask here as a legislator to legislate now here a situation which is caused by the lack of proper internal arrangements in departments. And ultimately, if we take away the right of litigants to serve on other offices of departments, it might, if we link that to the prescription arrangements already in the State Liability Act and other legislation, it might lead to a situation where one may ask the question whether this doesn't restrict access to justice or have the effect of restricting access to justice. So I'm really not at ease yet as to whether this is really the best course of action to go with.
Okay, just hold a bit. Let's hear Honorable Mugla. It's on the same point, Honorable Mugla.
Yes, on a very, very point. I was looking and comparing the advantages and disadvantages of doing what you were saying. I thought, maybe mistaken, that the state attorney is actually the state attorney, which means he's an agent of the head of the department. And that service on him is service perhaps to the department. I would be happy, perhaps you would say, serve the state attorney, but when it comes to court, the state attorney must produce evidence that the head of he must serve to the head of department within 5 or 10 days. Just extend that. But it will be very much inconvenient for people to go to Pretoria to go and stand. Sometimes it's an urgent matter. I understand that the head of department is supposed to, but I thought that he is a, unless we can convince me, that he's not an agent of the state. He must be, first of all, be instructed to handle the state affairs. Then I would understand you would be like any other attorney. But I would think that when you serve, you are indirectly serving the department, the head of the department.
Thank you, Honorable Mulana. Before I give you an opportunity, let's hear what the question is.
Yeah, I mean, just to clarify, as far as I can see it, the issue is not around service on cleaners or people working in the garden of a department. It's a question of removing the state attorney, or removing the option of serving on the state attorney and requiring it to be the head of department. And I think the issue, if I'm not incorrect, is that some departments have complained that things get served on the state attorney and they don't hear about it timeously. So I think that's all I can say on the reason for the change. I think the point is valid that the state attorney should sort themselves out better. So, you know, the issue why there's a specific act, as you know, for state liability is, one, the state is so big, it's public money, but I think it's more from the heads of departments saying we would rather have knowledge of the summons rather than getting told about it late from the state attorney's office. But as the state attorney is the state's attorney, and there could be issues of saying, well, not acceptable. It needs to sort its life out better.
Is that the answer?
I would like just to address the question of inconveniences, if you can address that as well.
It is correct. I concede that a litigant will probably be inconvenienced if you need to appoint a respondent to serve a subpoena on a head of department in another province. But on the other hand, one must also take into account, let's look at the South African Police Service. They've got thousands of members. They've got various provincial departments. It's quite big and everything else. For the National Commissioner, amongst others, to get notified of a subpoena like that is usually problematic if it needs to go through the whole system and, amongst others, the South African Police Service. So from our side, we thought the best way how we can regulate this is to ensure that the person that will be requested to pay or be held accountable for delict or contract into earlier the head of a department, he must be notified about the subpoena. Obviously there is a clause in the bill that do provide that if it's served on the state attorney, it must be brought to his attention. I think our primary angle to addressing this concern was to ensure it must be served on the department or the head of the department concerned. I must acknowledge there is inconvenience to a litigant. It's up to the committee to make or amend the current proposals. But if we could be allowed to make a fuller presentation during deliberations, during this stage we were only required to discuss the comments, and we will address the issue in depth. Thank you.
Chair, just though we were hoping to finalise the bill as much as possible, I think it's a fairly straightforward issue, and it would be up to the committee if they reject that clause or not.
I'm not really talking about rejection. I think that I'm not quite satisfied that there is no other way of doing it, which is convenient for both. I believe that, for example, let's take the police. There is at least nearer a police commissioner in each and every province. If you don't, must you go to Pretoria? The whole problem, it seems to be too much of a burden. It means that a person who is litigating against the state must have correspondence, must have go further than a person who is staying in Pretoria. All I'm trying to find out is that, is there no other way of making sure that the head of the department receives this someone, other than that the litigant must definitely make sure that he does. Because before you go to the state attorney, he will say, show me that you have served him. All I'm asking is that no other way that can be done.
Check.
I will find that and then I'll
okay. I was supposed to respond to that.
I wanted the chair to propose a way forward in maybe taking this discussion forward. One proposal that one wants to make is that I think where there is a, I'm just building on what the Deputy Minister said earlier on, where there are agreements, but I think, can we just dispense of those issues? And then focus on the sticky issues. where maybe there are no agreements, and then find a way of then addressing those. And I think that will take the process forward. For an example, if you look at Clause 4, the it's supported, Clause 4. It's quite a number of them. Clause 8D, there's agreement there. Clause 9, there's quite a number of them. So that you just dispense on those ones and then deal with this one. When you go to Clause 2, as much as there is no agreement there, but I think the response from the department is very clear, actually addressing the concerns of the CGE. So I wanted to propose that, Chair, that so that we will then take the process forward and deal with those issues that maybe we still have to have a discussion and then come up to a common agreement. I think that will assist the discussion to move forward.
I think the point is noted. What I thought they were now doing was to respond on the questions and the comments that were raised by the members.
Chair, not disagreeing with the previous point, but maybe just to respond on this one, because it's a clear-cut issue, as it were, of either or. And the issue is, no, you can't, can the officials correct me if I'm wrong, you can't serve, if you want to serve something on the Director General of Home Affairs, you can't serve it on the local Home Affairs office. That was done away with the state amendments to the state liability bill a couple of years ago. And the reason for the problem of serving on your local Home Affairs office is that they may not get it together to forward it or forward it too late. And you could have people literally, they have a refugee case in Cape Town, and they go and serve on the Home Affairs office in Sutherland, or anywhere, in the hopes that it won't get picked up. So this amendment was put in of saying, no, there must be service on the state attorney. And that was, I think, an amendment from the amendment to the State Liability Act that was passed about 7 or so years ago. Now, what has then happened? So you can serve on the state attorney if you want to serve on provincial or national government. The state attorney is wherever there's a high court. So in the Eastern Cape, you've got Mthatha, Bishu, Grahamstown, Port Elizabeth. In the Western Cape, you've just got Cape Town. But so you know, KZN, it would be Pietermaritzburg and Durban. Gauteng would be Joburg and Pretoria. Everywhere else has a single state attorney where there is the provincial capital, where the high court is. And so now there would be a state attorney coming in. Well, there would be a state attorney in Limpopo and Bombela. So that's that. The issue then is, I think, that some departments have complained that they're still not getting the material. And so the aim of the amendment is to say, no, you must serve then at the head office. And when it comes to provincial government, that you would then serve at the provincial capital. So from Eastern Cape, you would have to serve at Bishu if it is a provincial government department. So that's basically the question. I'm quite sympathetic to the argument of no, the state attorney should get its act together. So I understand that. It's valid. And in which case, then, if that is how the committee feels, then this clause should be rejected. But I think it's an either or. We're not going on to station commissioners. It's state attorney or it's head office. And yes. So that's all I can say. It's an either or choice. I don't know if one can go into it much further.
Can I ask if the service is done as through IME or through the staff? Must it be really literally
No. The problem with email and stuff is that it starts the court process and the clock starts ticking. And there needs to be certainty that you've got it. So, look, one may go on to modernization later, but that's a whole different category. So I would suggest to the Honourable Mpumlwana not to go that way at this stage. I would really say the question is whether one continues with the existing arrangement, where there have been some problems from some departments where they claim the state attorney did not forward the documentation to them timely, or and therefore one amends it to the head, or whether one says no, that's not acceptable, there needs to be greater accessibility, it should remain as the state attorney, in which case the clause is rejected. So I think it's an either or for the committee.
And thank you for this clarification. Can you proceed now to the rest of the comments and questions?
I think you've done
that's it. That's it.
Yes, Mr. Chairperson, we finished.
No, Chair, do you not want to go through can we not go through the bill clause by clause? We are eager to get the bill finalized. There are limited plenary sessions. So if you can finalize, that would be good.
Close by close.
Yeah.
Can we have just 5 minutes consultation, then we can
okay.
Close by
close.
Okay.
Can you give us some time?
Well, Chair, at this stage, there's only one amendment that is being. What I would suggest is maybe if it can be. Well. Let's find out. We need to know what else does the committee want to change. We have an amendment that we have tabled. That's the only amendment as far as the submissions. But we need to know, does the committee support or reject other clauses or want further amendments to those? And maybe then tomorrow one could bring in the A and the B list if there's not substantial amendments.
No, look, contrary to popular belief, I don't want to be the hurdle in the way of this bill. My issue still just remains with this clause we've just discussed. So quite possibly it would be good to hear what's the ANC's position on this. We having... Is it now already 3 co-opted members here? So I don't know. but otherwise, I don't have an objection in finalising the bill, but this seems to be an issue, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. I thought the Deputy Minister actually tried to address your concern. If the explanation is not enough, maybe what you need to do is to articulate what exactly is problematic and how you think it could actually be corrected.
Yeah. Chair, maybe we take you up on, if I can suggest, and not taking over anything, that there is the comfort break and there can just be a brief discussion.
Robin Horn can talk to the deputy.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Do you see the other one that you're serving it under here? So they are and you have 40 the leader, but I think you this is follow on that one.
But then how is it going to be with the
It did cause me some reason to generate my
I thought it was a model for the non-phase 2 course. So, phase 2 is the one in the areas where you go back, sexual senses cases, but to try and provide some Well, those are valid questions. But it was the agreement was to... The agreement was to... They would assist with coming up with a model. So there is no model. But presumably it would have to be a lot of fun. Cheers, thank you for your they want to call You see they're concerned about
What are you doing?
Oh, okay. Undergrad. Postgrad. Oh, okay. So you're doing this full time then?
Still part time. With a family business of my dad.
Okay. What's the family business? Okay, so not related to this or to international relations. Okay. Then why? What could, do you focus? Do you do the international relations committee?
I do sit on that. Okay. I sit on usually it's international relations, sports, and
okay. And you did UCT or UWC? Oh, okay.
There is really, but not after public comment. We're waiting for this to finish out. Can you see too much? The minister might not be satisfied with the regulations and send us back to the drawing board.
But that's why you want to get
Not always.
Always?
Not always. You know, the problem is that
ATC tomorrow. No, it's just that it's got to get to the NCOP. The NCOP will want to advertise. It would be very nice if we can get this passed by before the winter recess. Oh, here we will, yes, but we've got to give NCOP enough time. They all want to advertise for 2 weeks. Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Well, they've advertised, but they can do it.
No, they can just.
I mean. Well, the court order was for Parliament to pass.
Yeah, no, we saw
so
that.
So Parliament will have complied. Clause by clause. It's just an indication of whether they've got further amendments. Well, the B list will be the that clause 3 is going to the ANC want a study group, okay? On the B list will be that amendment to 37 and the inclusion. That's all at this stage. But what we need to find out with going through it clause by clause is are there any other amendments?
Okay. And then on
the
clause 3,
so
we will
see
that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we do it usually.
You do it usually.
Yeah, with current streaming number.
How long will you take it to do it?
It's a cut and paste. It's 10 minutes. I mean, you've done the 37. It's just formatting. And then with this clause, it's going to be accept or reject, but that will stand over till...
If we keep four, then I'm
fine. Yeah.
Okay, there's always incidental amendments like renumbering, the objects memo.
What you can do is just you'd have to prepare two, okay? One with three in and one with three out.
Okay, and then we can address those at a later stage.
Yeah.
So we don't need to be in
No, you've got your, I know you've got your other thing, I can, yeah. Okay.
Thank you, members. Honourable members, the department, you can proceed with the presentation of the
Chair, I think the question would be what we want to know here is in terms of preparing the A and the B list, is are there any other amendments or rejections of clauses from the committee in the bill? So I don't know if you want us to go clause by clause or how you want to do it.
Consensus clauses, which will be
because, Chair, then clause 3, I mean, I think it's a question of whether it's in or out, and I think that maybe if that matter can stand over to tomorrow, we can prepare two versions, one with it in, one with it out. I mean, I don't think there's anything more than a in or out. It's either you continue with the status quo of the state attorney accepting summonses for head of department, or you have the change that's requested here, which is to say it must go to the head office, to the director general or the head of department in a provincial government. So it seems to be a clause accepted or clause rejected, which can be then finalized tomorrow, and we'll prepare accordingly.
Already, Honorable Cohn. So you don't have to repeat. I'm going to say to the department, maybe it's a clause that needs to be reviewed. So you have heard the comment. Please go and review the clause so that you can be in the position to manage to address the comment.
Chair, then I think the next one you raised was clause 6, and that is this issue of I don't know if the concerns were addressed. What the Law Society were wanting, and to read from them, is we suggest that at least guidelines should be made as to what the minister should take into consideration when making regulations regarding persons or categories of persons who may liquidate and distribute estates. So as far as I can see, the Law Commission actually aren't even suggesting an amendment. They're wanting guidelines. And the clause is, as Ms. Pillay has said, it's empowering the minister to prescribe which persons are prohibited and then exemptions from those prohibitions, because the intention is, I think currently it is only attorneys who can distribute estates. The intention is to widen it, but to then give the minister the power to prohibit certain groups of people from dealing with the estates. It's a technical issue. So, Chair, I don't know if you have any problems really with that clause.
Members?
May I just say, maybe we must say it's just attorneys in the inner circle. so, no, I don't have a problem.
Okay. Chair, then I think the next one was the one that we tabled at clause 37, which includes it includes the 34A, the definition of yeah. So there's a new clause 34A inserted, which is a consequential amendment because of it links to the and that's a definition of what a sexual offences court is, and then it's the amendments that we've tabled to clause 37. With that typo that Mr. Roberts referred to, of which has facilities.
Any comments from members? Nothing. Okay, successful.
Chair, I think then that's it, and maybe then if we can prepare one with clause 3 in and one with clause 3 out, and if the committee then can vote on it tomorrow, and I would hope then it can be ATC'd. I see Mr. Romano shaking his head. I don't know why we can't be.
No, we can do it. I'm trying to persuade you to form.
Is he saying he will, after it's been voted on, that it can be finalised tomorrow?
He thinks that you really think it's thinking it's too ambitious, but I'm sure it's possible. Let's see what business is put before us.
Yeah.
Do then tell us that it's possible for us to finalise it. What time tomorrow? Oh, we were not scheduled to meet. We will get SMS that it indicates.
No, the point of us that we've got other committees. No.
That will be taken into consideration.
I mean, Chair, it will be, I think, a meeting of about, it's a voting meeting, so it's like 15, 20 minutes. I mean, maybe if you schedule it at like 12:30 or something, before lunch, then people can attend their earlier meetings. No, there's no EPCs in the morning tomorrow, I don't know.
If there's no EPCs tomorrow, then we can try and meet tomorrow at 9 o'clock. What the secretary will do, he'll go and look at the parliamentary schedule, and then you will then know as to whether a meeting tomorrow morning is feasible or not.
The EPC that I've got in my diary is Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries for 2 o'clock. Which I don't know if it affects anyone on the committee.
Okay.
Isn't the Honourable Breitenbach into fishing? Into fishing?
So we can possibly see tomorrow morning at 9, but wait for the SMS from the...
Are we staying behind?
You want to stay, I think.